5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson.
Oh, hello. Welcome along once again to Tech Talk, the RNIB technology show, along with Robin Christofferson. Hello, Robin.
I'm still here, still surviving.
And he's still liking the show, aren't you?
Very much so.
I didn't pay you to say that. We are going to be talking about lots of different things today. So much to get through. We're going to be discussing the state of web accessibility in 2019. Robin, there was a survey out recently by an organisation, a very well-known organisation that does a lot of research into websites and their accessibility, called WebAIM. And it's fair to say the results were not so good.
Things are not good on the internet, guys.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about that and what that actually means as well, because, you know, to say that out loud, it might seem a bit, okay, well, what does that mean? What are we talking about here? And how can I, as a business, make my website more accessible to more people? And actually, frankly, why should I? Well, all those questions and answers coming up here on today's episode of Tech Talk. Plus, we're going to be talking about Apple's big event. It was called Showtime, but was it a showstopper? We'll be finding out. Also, at that event, Apple launched a new news service, and we're going to be hearing about that, but also, perhaps, Robin, you found a better way to access newspapers and magazines.
Tried and tested.
Mm. And I've already bought it. no great shock there. So that's all coming up here on Tech Talk. So let's get right into it then, shall we? We've got so much to get through. I want to kick things off, Robin, by talking about web accessibility. It's a huge topic. What's your experience of web accessibility? Because you've got no vision at all, right? So you rely entirely on a screen reader.
Yeah, and I think probably my experience is common to everyone who uses a screen reader, which is that, you know, we're the hardest customers to cater for, to do well. If there's anything broken under the hood, then we, you know, we'll stumble over it and have a hard time. So the internet is a difficult place for people who are screen reader users, where the website owners, the developers, the designers haven't taken into account accessible best practice, and the guidelines are out there. It's just a question of people getting with the program, getting up to speed, and helping us get on the internet.
Well, I want to play in some audio that came out of CSUN. Your colleague at AbilityNet is Addy. Tell us a bit about Addy before we play his clip, because he's been very kindly giving us audio that he recorded there, hasn't he?
Absolutely. Addy Latif, our man on the ground, also a blind JAWS user, and he was talking with a chap from WebAIM who have done this survey, and it's shocking. Actually, no, it's not surprising, but we shouldn't be numbed to the fact of how shockingly poor the state of accessibility is when it comes to websites.
Yeah, a lot of words beginning with S come to mind. Staggering, yep, is another one.
And saddening.
Saddening, yeah. We could go on, but let's hear Addy speak to Gerard from WebAIM about the survey that they conducted. That is WebAIM.
We published the results of an analysis of the homepages for the top 1 million websites. So it's an automated analysis for accessibility that detected patterns of inaccessibility.
Yeah.
And results show pretty pervasive and significant accessibility issues generally across homepages on the web.
So 1 million websites you tested. So what was the result? Because I always tell people, yeah, like, 80% of websites aren't accessible, 90%, but these are numbers that are anecdotal to me. What was your result of the 1 million?
Yeah, so lots of errors that were detectable. We found on average about 60 errors per homepage, so a user with a disability encountering an average homepage would expect to encounter 60 errors. They're detectable. Even a computer can figure those out.
Right.
As far as the conformance rate with the web content accessibility guidelines, as we map those errors to WCAG, we found that about 98% of pages failed those guidelines. So quite significant. Now, this is only home pages.
Sure.
But that was quite interesting.
Kind of gives you an insight to what the rest of the site would probably be like.
It does. Yeah. And we have data that shows a correspondence between home page errors and types of errors and pages that are present throughout the rest of the site. Usually home pages tend to have a few more errors, but there's usually a correspondence between those.
So these are detectable errors, you said. So this is errors that the WebAIM tool?
Wave tool
that detects. So in addition, if you were to manually test, that there could be other errors that would come up.
There would be likely on most pages, sure.
Okay, and so 1 million websites. Did you handpick these 1 million?
Yeah. So there are a few different sources for determining top homepages. You know, we don't have access to like site visitor data for every homepage on the web. Mm-hmm. So there are some various sources that use things like network traffic, mm-hmm. DNS lookups, cross-linking, and network references, things like that, to try to determine the sites that have the most traffic and lookup and cross-references. So there are a few different data sources for those. We use two primary ones, kind of put them together to determine top home pages and then analyze those. Our intent was not to find the top 1 million home pages, but to analyze a whole lot of home pages that are popular for accessibility.
1 million web pages that their tool looked at. So this was an automated survey, essentially. The computer went off and did the work. And it came back with 60 errors on average on those home pages. I mean, over 1 million websites, that's a high figure.
Absolutely, and 60 is average. So obviously some will be fewer, but some will be probably a lot more. This is significant. You know, we cannot discount this survey. We heard there in the piece, Gerard was saying that they have done, accompanying research to show that this isn't just about home pages. This is indicative of the site more generally, of a site more generally. So now we also heard in that clip that this is issues that the Wave automated web checker, accessibility checker, can flag. And at AbilityNet, you know, obviously we do audits of web pages, etc. And we found that about a quarter of the issues on any given site can't be picked up by automated checking tools. It's more subjective. It's to do with appearance and layout. It's to do with, you know, Wave, for example, or any automated checker can tell if a given image hasn't got alternative text there, and it can do some clever stuff to say, well, this image is of a certain size and it's got these tags around it, so it's probably not just a little decorative image, it's an important image, it's a, you know, substantial image, it should have alternative text. So it can flag that, but it can't say whether the alternative text that might be on such an image is appropriate, is suitable, because, you know, it's not that clever, it doesn't know what the image has got in it. Maybe it will do soon. But potentially another quarter on top of that 60 might be other issues that these automated tools can't flag. And I know people might be thinking, well, you know, it could be 60 insignificant issues that aren't really going to impact the user. We would actually say that, you know, because these are from single A and double A, I'm sure people are aware of the WCAG, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, are divided into three priority levels. And
these are the standards that are set for website developers, aren't they? These are the kind of tools you would use to say, well, is my website up to standard?
Absolutely. They're a set of guidelines. And if you've done your homework and you've made sure that your web pages and your functionality complies with these, I think it's 38 individual checkpoints in priority levels 1 and 2 that give you that single A or ideally double A compliance, it is the legal standard, the legal minimum level, then you're going to have a relatively even playing field for people with a range of disabilities. It's not going to be a Rolls-Royce solution. That would be if you go that extra mile to AAA. So what we're looking at here is on average 60 contraventions, transgressions in those high priority 1 and 2 checkpoints. So we are going to see a significant impact. These are important. And to have such a high number on average across so many pages, and we heard that 98% of those million home pages had on average 60 of these transgressions. So this is a very significant survey, it's not necessarily going to be useful for, I mean, obviously, I don't know whether they're going to provide this information to those individual sites, but any of those organizations could do the same thing by running the free WAVE web accessibility checker over their sites. But this is to give us the headlines that we've heard here. It's shocking. It's really shocking.
Yeah, so, I mean, this was all at CSUN that WebAIM announced this survey and the results of it. And I think what surprises me is that number, 98%. Now, when we talk about the million websites, and Addy picks up on this in the interview, you know, they didn't go out and hand-pick anything. They'd look at the top 1 million sites, the websites that didn't name any, at least I don't know if they did name them by, you know, in that way, name and shame, or whether they just stated that a million of the top used websites. Mm. But either way, these are websites that are obviously used a lot. This could be anything, really. It could be restaurants, it could be airports or airlines, I should say, all of that kind of thing. And these websites aren't up to code. My question to you is, and I know you do a lot of work in this field, how do you encourage a business to make their website accessible, when clearly it's going to take some work, it's going to take some time and inevitably some money?
Yeah, I think we touched on this a few weeks ago. They estimate, research has shown, an extra 2-5% effort, time, work, potentially budget, to make a website or a mobile app compliant. So that's not a showstopper. That definitely falls into the realms of reasonable under the Equality Act. You know, reasonable adjustment is what it's all about. So we don't see that as being a showstopper. And the carrots, you know, the business case, are massive. It makes them better for everybody. You know, everybody is temporarily impaired on a daily basis, particularly when using mobile. We're all computing in extreme environments these days. Most of us listening to this have probably used our mobile phone one-handed today. So we're not only have a visual impairment, we've also got a motor or dexterity difficulty for that time that we're juggling our phones one-handed while we're doing something else. And I could give a dozen other parallel examples. So, you know, it really is for everybody now. So everyone would benefit. So I think the carrots have been well understood, and we would still want to keep on raising those to kind of get people to get on board. But we want to see better developed sticks as well in terms of fines and that sort of thing. And I think, you know, we touched upon that before, and there's lots of articles on the AbilityNet website where we're calling for the government to do something like Norway does, where they actually take they fine organizations that aren't compliant within a certain time frame, etc. And that's got to be a win-win. So we want to see a shift, and hopefully a survey like this, which is frankly, you know, very shocking, although probably not that surprising to people that are already aware of the, you know, parlous state of the internet when it comes to people with disabilities. Let's hope that this kind of survey and the headlines that it will get will make more businesses do more, frankly.
I just hope it gets headline.
Yeah.
You know, I really hope it does, because I want to hear this on the news. I don't want to hear this just in our world. It needs to be beyond that, because this will never get out there to the businesses. And I think ultimately when we talk about fines, and I think you're right, I think there needs to be something that says if you don't do this, there is a penalty for it. But equally, we've got to show businesses what the returns are. And there are huge returns. I mean, we're talking here about more customers. Why is that not appealing to business?
Yeah, a few years ago, AbilityNet and a consortium of other organisations, IBM, BCS, the British Computer Society, got together, and we drafted, it was a consortium called One Voice, and we drafted that One Voice accessible, I can't remember what it's called now, it's basically the ultimate business case for accessibility. And that is a document that very thoroughly explores the return on investment, the business case for accessibility. If you search for One Voice business case accessible IT, then you should find that. The name escapes me now, was a few years ago, but it's still very valid. But yeah, you're absolutely right. We need, and I would actually encourage all our listeners do post, whether it's on Twitter or write blog posts, or even if you just talk to friends or colleagues, and just mention those headline figures there. 98% of websites in a million tested had multiple errors on their homepage, which is like the front door, isn't it, to any website. It's like bricks and mortar stores not having ramps up to their front door for people in wheelchairs. You can't even get through the front door.
Well, the thing is, so, you know, I saw a lot of social media criticising some of the results from CSUN, from WebAIM at CSUN, because they were saying, and this was blind people talking here, this wasn't, you know, coming from outside the bubble, if you like. These were blind people saying, well, you know, this is, first of all, automated research, how trustworthy is that? And secondly, well, of course, we discussed that, but secondly, you know, this information, it's kind of getting to the psyche of, well, you know, your website's not accessible, so, you know, the homepage isn't accessible, so therefore, you know, the rest of it isn't, but how do we know that? But of course, like you say with that example, if there's no ramp at the door, then the chances are the disabled toilet inside is going to be down a step. So, you know, you think, well, if they haven't considered it from the outset, what are the chances of inside going to be like? And that's the same with websites. The front page might be disastrous. That tells you the rest of it's probably not going to be that great either, and that's the problem. From a personal perspective, and I can only speak for me, but since using a screen reader, using the web has become so much more difficult, and things I used to do I either can't do anymore, or I've had to think of alternative ways to do it. Like, for example, and I give this as an example, not necessarily as a bad site, because I don't think it is a bad website, I just think that it's so cluttered, is Amazon. Now, I like Amazon website. God knows I spend enough money on it. But its website's quite clunky. So there's that argument of accessibility versus usability there, right? It might be accessible, but it's not very usable, in my opinion, right? Others may feel differently about that. It depends on your experience, depends how long you've been using screen readers, all of that stuff. But what I did was I just said, right, sod that. I'm going to get the Amazon app because it's easier and it's nice and simple. I can find what I want. It's there and it works for me. And that's the thing. We found our way around it. But truthfully, we shouldn't have to do that. That's the problem.
I mean, we have touched upon this before. We have to work in the world that we have today. Yeah. And whilst we would definitely recommend people to go out there and fight for the cause of better accessibility, if, for example, you've got access to a smartphone or a tablet, chances are the mobile app will be a much cleaner, much simpler experience. But going back to what you were saying a moment ago, I mean, I would be the first to acknowledge to those people on Twitter that were saying, you know, this is how indicative of real life experience are all of these automated tests. Well, they're absolutely right. Some of the guidelines that are within priorities level 1 and 2 are about proper use of HTML. If you open this div tag, make sure you close it properly. Otherwise, the page won't kind of compile, shall we say, won't be compliant to strict HTML standards. And that could impact accessibility. In reality, JAWS and all the other screen readers know that this is a problem. It's very prevalent out there and they don't expect you to do that, whereas some older screen readers might fall over with issues like that. So we're absolutely the first to say you won't necessarily encounter 60 issues on average on these homepages, but you absolutely can't discount the scale of findings that we saw there and say that it's not demonstrating that there are going to be significant issues for a lot of people. Those priority level 1 and 2 checkpoints aren't highest and next highest priority for you know, no good reason. I would say let's not discount this survey. And the other thing I'd say is on the kind of downside, like you were saying a moment ago, if there's that many issues on a homepage of a website and there's chances are it's going to be on other pages too, people who hear this, you know, the website owners who might see their site there listed, for example, might think, oh, blimey, this sounds like too much work. You know, how big is the hurdle that we're going to have to overcome to help these disabled customers? So that's a potential problem as well.
Well, the answer to that is how much do you care about customers?
Yeah.
Forget disability. How much do you actually care about the customer?
Yeah, it'll make it better for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Makes it better for everyone and the company gets more money. And I think we need to shout about that more. You know, I think that my money is worth just as much as the next person, irrespective of my sight condition or not. My money's still worth the same to that company, or at least it should be. and, you know, I want to spend money in a store, I should be able to do that. But, you know, I will happily walk away from a company's website. If I can't get to what I'm trying to get to, I'm off. I'm going somewhere else.
And you're not necessarily just purchasing for yourself. You might be the person that chooses the next significant white goods purchase for your family, or the next car, or whatever it might be. You'd be booking the holidays, for example.
Yeah, exactly. Well, do tell us your thoughts on web accessibility, where we are with it. What's your experience? techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But let's talk about seeing AI. And Addy met another guy, Robin, who I have to say I was quite jealous he managed to meet this guy. This is Saqib from Microsoft. Nicknamed as the godfather of the seeing AI app. Here's Addy talking to him at CSUN.
I have the privilege of working in an awesome company like Microsoft, and a few years ago we had this hackathon where you could spend a week making anything you wanted, and I was like, I don't want to make just another little productivity tool. So I've always loved AI, so I thought, what if I went around and found all the AI bits and bobs I could find in the whole company and put them together to solve challenges that I face? And then that was a very, very rudimentary app. But then I showed it around, and the next year met a bunch of really great people over in the US and Silicon Valley and Redmond, and it snowballed. More and more people joined the cause, and it became a mission of what is the best we could do with AI to empower the visually impaired community. And eventually, got some notice from the CEO, and it became our day job.
I heard you. I mean, you said notice from the CEO. Did you actually, what did you do? Did you actually have to go and sell the idea?
Yeah, I was very lucky that one of my team members is an incredible marketing salesperson. And so it's really, we were just showing it around, not specifically to Satya, but just we were so excited. We were showing it to anyone who would listen. And I think eventually, you know, the right people heard and told some other people, and eventually there was our big developer conference, and someone was like, man, we need to share this story at the conference. And yeah, it took a life on its own because so many people were excited, and that's the great thing I love about companies like Microsoft.
Wow. And the culture's changed a lot at Microsoft. Do you believe you've been here, what, 10, 12 years?
Yeah, 13.
13, sorry, oh God. Have you noticed that? Because I've noticed in the products have changed. Why have the products become more accessible? What do you think the one or two reasons for that is?
I don't know. I think it's hard to speak for the whole company, but I've definitely noticed a change.
You've noticed it as well?
Yeah, noticed a big change. And, you know, over the years, I think the whole industry has moved to this point where accessibility and inclusivity is more mainstream. And, you know, you used to be the sole person shouting in the corner that, you know, wow, you know, inclusion is good business. But I just feel like people, we've still got a distance to go. But people, there's much more understanding of inclusion just makes good sense. It makes good products for everyone.
The interesting thing there, and that was Saqib, of course, talking from Microsoft, the guy who actually developed the app Seeing AI that a lot of us use on our smartphones. I think what really stood out there is the fact that he did this as part of an event which was about encouraging new ideas. And that certainly shows a difference in the way that Microsoft works now to perhaps how it's worked before, Robin. But I just find it really interesting how that idea came about and how it was adopted by Microsoft and championed.
Yeah, I mean, I think this story is a kind of an antidote to everyone who was feeling depressed after the last item.
Yeah, it's kind of the good news story, isn't it?
Yeah, I think this is exactly an example of a company that gets it and has really, you know, redoubled or recommitted to accessibility. And we're definitely seeing that across their products. You know, we might, you know, our eyes might be watering about some updates to Skype recently, or Microsoft Teams, basically any app that's using a web-based interface. They're called progressive web apps, and it's a new thing, guys, so it won't be the last time we see our beloved desktop apps turning into basically a web page that doesn't work or behave as well. But
not
they
yet,
are improving
anyway.
That all the time. That's right. So with Skype, for example, it was a bit of a shock when that got updated, but they have, and you can see this, their commitment to it. Okay, one could strongly argue that they shouldn't have released it without having, you know, really put a lot of effort into accessibility. It was accessible, But it was like you were saying earlier, it wasn't necessarily usable, a bit like the Amazon web page. There was an awful lot of stuff there, and it was really difficult and frustrating to get around. But we have seen huge improvements there. And another example would be the accessibility checker in Office, you know, Word, Excel, Outlook, PowerPoint, that sort of thing. That's constantly being improved. I would love to see them surface it more easily, even make it part of the spell checker. Because, you know, if you try to send an email, the spell checker kicks in by default. You probably wouldn't consider saving a Word document and sending it to someone without running the spell checker over it first. I'd love to see the accessibility issues being flagged within that same dialogue, as it were.
That could be like a, you know, obviously a lot of companies use Microsoft. So that could be something that could be built into IT as a default. Yep. That would be good.
Yeah, and the permissions that IT can impose upon their business can include what comes up in the ribbon or what's left out of it. So, yeah absolutely. That's probably within the gift of each corporate. But I would love Microsoft to say, well, we think it's this important. We're going to make it as well signposted, as well used as the spell checker is, for example. But yeah, things like seeing AI. I mean, Google has always had these kind of garage projects, but so many things with Google recently have been dropped, have come to the end of life, and people that relied on them have been sort of left in the lurch there. So I hope that Microsoft isn't in that space, and that projects like Seeing AI and Soundscape will just continue to get more and more love.
It's about us, though, isn't it? It is about us talking about these products. And I say us as in blind people talking about these products, not ignoring them, not getting complacent about this. Because, you know, we live in a world where, yes, we're now in a place where these apps are available, and, you know, technology is certainly in a better place than it was ever probably in our lives. I remember someone saying to me, a couple of years back, you know, this is the time to be blind. In terms of technology, this is the time to be blind because of all the accessible tech that's out there. Now, you can argue that day and night, you know, is it a good time to be blind? Well, I can see the argument, you know, if there was a time, you'd want it to be at a point in time where technology was able to help you in the way that it can. Now, Google is a really interesting example. I've been saying this for years. People used to laugh at me when I'd say this. I'd say, I never trust this Google product because next week it'll be binned. And that was one of the issues, that, you know, Google's products do tend to be shelved more easily. I don't get the impression Microsoft would do that. Who knows? But I think with Seeing AI in particular, the amount of investment and time that's going into that app even now, we've seen the latest features you were talking about recently with the Explore by Touch feature on images that's been brought out. You know, now they've got iPad support, which is, you know, brilliant. Someone actually asked me, I meant to say this last week actually, someone asked, why did they bring out iPad support for Seeing AI? What's the point in that? Because most people who use it may well be completely blind. Well, that's not necessarily true. There are a lot of partially sighted people that use it. But in addition to that, the real reason they did it was because kids in classrooms weren't allowed to use their phones.
Yep.
So they decided, well, if we put it on iPads, the kids are probably using iPads in class, so they'll be able to use it there. And I thought, what a brilliant thing. Such a simple decision, but hugely impactful. And it gets this into the hands of those kids.
Yeah, they were probably aware of the imminent relaunch of the iPad Mini as well, which is obviously a gift for the education sector. And to have a larger picture on screen for that Explore by Touch feature as well, I think, you know, for the larger screen, that might make it easier if you're exploring a group of, you know, a large family gathering, for example, and you want to find where each and every one of your named faces was in that group photo.
Very exciting times. I hope that Seeing AI lives on. I must admit, it's an app which I've been obviously talking about it for a long time, but I'm still a bit late to the party with it. I only really started using it, I'd say, properly, I'd say about 3 months ago. And it all started because I got a letter from my doctor and I couldn't read it. And I really wanted to read this letter in detail. I had a lot of information in it. And I thought, I need to read this. And I thought, hang on, Seeing AI. And you know, pop the paper down on the desk. You know, a couple of seconds later, it's reading the whole letter to me, and I thought, this is brilliant. And then, of course, you know what it was like. You know, you find something again, suddenly you're telling everybody about it. You must try this app. It's the greatest app ever. And it is. It's a brilliant app. So long may it continue. However, the flip side to that is that what it has done is raise the issues of the apps by Microsoft that are not accessible. It's kind of shone a light on those, or are not as accessible as they could be, like Skype. Anyway, moving on, let's talk. You can share your thoughts to us, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Let's do the news.
News from the internet.
And there's really only one main story I can think of that has been dominating the tech news world for the last couple of weeks, and that is Apple's big event, which of course was called Showtime. We weren't expecting any hardware at this, Robin, because, well, we'd seen new iPads and then we saw the AirPods. So disappointed in that.
They took away hardware 2 days after the event. If that, they cancelled,
yes,
AirPower.
AirPower's
dead. Wireless charging mat. Yeah. So yeah, if we want to briefly mention hardware and bring people up to date, if you're holding your breath, then let it go.
Yeah, there's nothing.
Just let it go.
Yeah, there was nothing to talk about at all. It was all about services. It was all about rinsing us for more cash. And, you know, that's, look, they're a business. That's what they do, right? I mean, you know, no, I don't think anybody expects them to say, have all this for free. But I do think that they certainly set out their stall this year for being a services company going forward from now on, much more so than they ever did before. They've taken this to a whole new level. We'll not go into all the detail. I'm sure most people will have heard about most of this. But we did see things like the, what was the first thing that was up? It was Apple News, wasn't it? Apple News,
yep.
Which is, had a bit of a redesign, but you've now got Apple News Plus, only available in the States at the moment, is coming to the UK later this year.
States and Canada,
yeah. And they are getting new magazines and all that kind of thing. The question is, accessibility-wise, you're hearing that it might not be as accessible as we hope.
Yeah, I wrote a piece about this week because we did have high hopes that all these magazine titles that were included in Texture, which is the app, the service that they bought, which was $9.99 a month, and that's now still the price of Apple News Plus, would be accessible, and that basically the magazine title publishers would provide the text and the images, and Apple would do the rest, formatting them nicely in their Apple News app under the News Plus tab, which if you subscribe, you'll get an extra tab at the bottom, which will give you access to that paid material, all of those newspapers and magazine titles that you'd otherwise have to pay for. But no, it's not the case. Some of them will be text and images, in which case, if you need to have larger text or change the colours or, you know, make the appearance suitable for you, some of that will be like that, but most of it or a lot of it will be PDFs, pictures of pages, guys. So, I mean, it will look pixel perfect, and that's, you know, probably one reason, that and ease, because it's the lazy option to take a picture of a page. I mean, the text will be available, so it's not literally going to be a bunch of pixels that you'll be getting for your money. The text will be available, but it won't be able to be, you know, you won't be able to impose your own color preferences for text and background color or change the font style. You can obviously zoom in on a page, but we all know if you need to go in too far, then you're only going to get a tiny proportion of the page and you'll have to be scrolling around just to read a single page of a magazine.
Which, in fairness, for some people who've got certain eye conditions, that might work well for them.
Yeah.
I know a lot of partially sighted people that use the Zoom, actually, and kind of like it. I don't. I never really got on well with Zoom, but I know people do like it.
And that would be relatively okay if you're not having to go in at, you know, 12 or 18x or something, and you're not on a phone-sized screen. But yeah, so that's a big disappointment. So it would really come down to, A, if it's available where you are, B, you're willing to pay that money, and C, you're willing to take the risk that the titles that you're particularly interested in are going to be, you know, accessible, are going to be able to be read by whatever your access methodology or technology is, whatever your settings are. So yeah, Apple News Plus, not available here yet, perhaps later on in the year, but at the moment just the US and Canada.
And at least in dollars, $9.99 a month, probably the same here, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I would have thought.
So yeah, I mean, if you want it, yeah, good luck to you. Apple Arcade was another one that came out. I have to be honest, this is the least interesting thing to me ever. Games are not my forte. I'm not into games particularly. I don't have the vision for them. They don't really interest me anyway. So this kind of, I just skipped past that bit. I think I made a cup of tea at that point at the event. What about you?
So if there are gamers out there, particularly if you've got some vision, for all kind of voiceover users on iOS, I don't think there'll be a lot for us there. You know, we're probably not big gamers except those very few like Words with Friends and Dice World and that sort of thing that are nice and voiceover compatible. Those sort of titles aren't going to be in Apple Arcade. Basically, it's games that can be compatible with iPhone, iPad, tvOS, so your Apple TV, and the Mac. They will bring that to over to that gaming experience over to the Mac. Not going to be coming out until autumn, and we don't know the pricing yet, and it will consist at launch of 100 titles that they have worked closely with those developers to make sure that they are top quality games that they feel will be worthy of whatever the price tag each month will be. So, oh, and the one selling point, apart from the fact that you know you can go in and have a good experience and there won't be, you know, junkware or whatever, you know, they'll all be of a really good top quality experience. A, they won't be anything that will be inappropriate for families. And B, you won't be stung by lots of in-app purchases. Yeah. So a lot of games, very popular games, are free, but once the children have got their hands on it, unless you've got the right settings, you'll find that there's hundreds of pounds worth of donuts or gems that have been bought by your children as in-app purchases, and none of those and no ads will exist in any of these games.
Well, that's good news. Yeah. The other thing, of course, was Apple TV. That was another big deal. That was the main event, really, wasn't it? I mean, that was what the whole thing was gearing up to. Yeah, Showtime. And they introduced lots of new TV shows that they're going to launch in autumn. Again, no word on pricing. But what I can tell you, I mean, one of the questions I had last week was, you know, will this content be audio described? Well, I think the answer is clearly yes, because even the trailers that exist now on the Apple website for the new shows and promoting the new service, the trailers themselves are audio described. I've never seen that before. So that's a massive step forward. And I have to say, for those who are fans of Netflix, I know you're not one of them. Sorry, not, Robin.
Nothing,
no, you're not a big fan.
Personal Netflix, but I don't do TV.
No, you
sorry,
just don't
guys.
Do TV. Never mind Netflix. No. But no, for those fans of Netflix and Netflix AD, I would say that it's that standard. It is that standard. I think it's the same company, actually. I'm sure I read that somewhere, that they're going to be using the same company to make the audio description for the new shows, which is absolutely brilliant. But there is one thing, and I'll get your final thought on the Apple event in a sec, but mine is that the best, most, I say interesting is maybe pushing it, but the thing that was most accessible to me out of all the announcements was the Apple Card. They're bringing out a credit card. Now, before you get too excited, it's only available in the States at the moment, although they did say at the event that other countries there would be an option available. And this is an Apple Card which kind of runs, it sits on your phone, but you do get a hardware card. You do get an actual card.
Titanium.
That goes along with it. Titanium, yes. But the bit that I like is it doesn't have any numbers on it. It's got nothing on it, actually. It must have some kind of identifier so that you know it's yours. But I don't know if it does. But I know it's got an Apple logo on it, and that's all that we could tell. There was no, you know, that three-digit code you get at the back?
CVV.
It's not there.
Yep.
The CVV. It's not got the 16-digit number on the front. It's not got your name on it. So from a security perspective, it's brilliant. It's not contactless. That's interesting. But of course, the idea is you would use your phone for that or your watch. But it means that all the information is stored in the phone, and that's great for us because we know, because it's Apple, it'll be accessible. So all the information, you know, you don't have to learn the 16-digit number because it's always available to you. And I don't even think it works like that. I think it kind of gives you a unique number each time you purchase.
Yep.
So you don't actually have this process of learning numbers and remembering them all. So from an accessibility perspective, and I'd say that only, I wouldn't encourage anyone to get a credit card, frankly. But if you did want to get a credit card, then I suppose this is a good option.
Yes, and cashback. If you use it to purchase Apple products, then you get 3% cashback.
I'll be a millionaire.
Well, slightly less in debt, maybe. Yes. But yeah, so it should be worth saying, though, that other stores, Target in the States, for example, give you 5% cashback if you use a Target store card on Apple purchases. And there's probably similar ones over here, I'm not sure. So it's not 3% that you couldn't possibly get elsewhere, but it's still 3%. And if you're buying an iPad Pro, for example, at I don't know how much, £1,200 or something, you know, that's a very significant chunk of change back again. So yeah, I think that's really, really important. And that one-time code thing means that, and the lack of numbers on the card, etc., mean that all of these shoulder surfers, as they are called, who look over your shoulder at ATMs and things like that, they're out of luck. They're not going to be able to get information from your card to be able to use at other times. So yeah, really, really useful. And from an accessibility point of view, as with everything else that Apple does, the way that you would use that in your phone, etc., is going to be fully inclusive.
Yeah. Okay. I can't believe I'm going to say this on Tech Talk, but let's talk about Brexit. Can't be bothered with Brexit, if I'm honest. But, you know, there is actually some serious questions coming out of this. If there is a no deal, and by the time this show goes out, who knows what could be going on, because we have no idea. But if there's a no deal Brexit, how would that affect something like EU roaming charges? And this is a question that's come up quite a lot. Well, our Jordan Emery has been investigating for us this week.
As Brexit looms ever closer, the effects of the decision will soon be a reality. However, what we may not be thinking about yet is how our data roaming will be affected as we embark on our European holidays after the event. Currently, due to laws introduced 2 years ago, UK visitors to Europe can use their data abroad with no extra fees. The Roam Like You're at Home regulation entitles Brits to the same data package that they have in the UK around the rest of Europe, without any extra or hidden costs. We can phone, text, and find our way around on maps without worrying about a horrendous phone bill when we return. In the event of a Brexit deal, we could see this privilege continue. There will be no change in our data roaming agreements, at least until the end of the transition period in December 2020. After this point, the deal has the potential to continue for another couple of years. Nevertheless, in the alternative scenario of a no deal, there will see definite changes in our roaming habits. In the event of a no deal, EU mobile operators will be able to charge UK firms for providing services, a fee that will likely be passed on to the British customer. As a result, we would see a sudden end to our cap data spending in Europe, with roaming fees determined by individual firms instead. However, if it is the latter outcome, it has been made clear that the government will legislate for a £45 monthly limit on the amount that customers spend whilst they are abroad. Additionally, phone companies will be obliged to tell their users when they have used 80% and then 100% of their data allowance. Another reason as to why we may not have to worry is that currently 10 firms with 85% of UK mobile users say they have no plans to change their roaming policies in the event of a no deal. Ultimately, with the uncertainty of Brexit, it is best to look at your individual mobile tariffs terms and conditions when it comes to data roaming before travelling to Europe. Although Ofcom regulations mean that companies have to give a month's notice of any additional roaming charges, when preparing for your trip away, ensure that you are not caught out and check the small print before you leave the UK.
Jordan Emery with that report for us here on Tech Talk. Now let's talk about news. We've just heard, of course, us talking about the Apple News Plus service, which is coming to the UK later in the year. But there are alternative ways for you to read your news, and Robin has been finding out about one.
At the recent Apple event, they announced a new news service, a subscription service called Apple News Plus that gave you access to lots of magazines and news publications that aren't available in full or even in part in the standard news app that's been around for a while. Now, one big potential drawback is that, just like in the Texture app and service that they bought to create the Apple News Plus subscription service, there's a wide variety of accessibility or inaccessibility in the publications that you're going to be able to access. We were hopeful after the announcement that Apple would just be taking the text and the pictures from magazines and news publications and reformatting them so that we could change the text size and the background and foreground colors, etc. But unfortunately, in many cases, they're just going to be taking PDFs of pages. And we all know the potential implications there. You can't change the colors. You can't change the text size except by zooming in, and then you see less and less of the page. And for voiceover users, for example, when it comes to iOS, there may be significant problems there. Oh, and it's also going to be available on the Mac. So for voiceover users on Mac OS 2. So that's a shame, but it gives me an opportunity to tell you about my preferred way of accessing the news, and that is by RSS. I'm sure you've heard of RSS. Really simple syndication it stands for, but don't worry about that. Basically, it's a way of searching for topics like technology or Amazonian tree frogs, whatever you're interested in, or publications like TechCrunch or The New Yorker or Woman's Own magazine, whatever it might be. Just search for whatever you're interested in, whether it's a publication name or a particular topic or indeed a particular author or a single word like accessibility, for example. You can create searches for all of those, and you can subscribe in an app like the one I'm going to show you in a minute, that will bring articles that meet those criteria to you every single day in a really accessible and free format without ads or without any other junk. And that, you know, what could be better than that? That sounds amazing, doesn't it? So my preferred RSS reader or gatherer is called Lyre, L-I-R-E. And I will demonstrate how it works now and some of the reasons why I love it so much. So I'm on my iPhone here.
Lyre, 67 new items.
67 new items. And that number will go up through the day as more and more articles are published that meet your criteria that you've subscribed to. So if I double tap on that.
Lyre, back button.
Okay, so I'm in the article view here. So there should be 67 items here to read if I tap near the top.
India shows it can destroy satellites in space, worrying experts about space debris. The Verge. All posts. India claims it has demonstrated the capability of destroying satellites in orbit by shooting one of its own satellites with a missile launched from Earth, the country's prime minister.
I'm going to pause the reading there. Now, one of the really powerful things that I absolutely love about this news reader is that, and you can configure this, this is how I've configured it, every time I swipe right through items, it reads to me the title of the piece, then where it comes from, and then it starts to read the first five lines of the article. And if I'm not interested in that, I can just flick on to the next one. And so 67 might sound like a lot, but I can actually really quickly get through them. So let's try.
Watch Samsung fold the crap out of the Galaxy Fold. TechCrunch. We've not seen a lot of the Samsung Galaxy Fold. The device didn't make it. Senators demand to know why election vendors still sell voting machines with known vulnerabilities. TechCrunch. FTC hands multi-million-dollar fines to four robbling companies. The Verge. All posts. 10 European lawmakers say they voted against pivotal copyright amendment by accident. The Verge. All posts. Europe agrees raft of safety features to be baked into new vehicles. TechCrunch. All new vehicles sold in the European Union.
Now that sounds like a really interesting one. So apologies if you were interested in some of the ones before then, but you can very quickly, and I actually would go... Normally, I would go much more quickly through the items than that. But, you know, you can just very quickly get a flavour of what each one is. And if you're interested, you can listen to more before you flick on to the next one. Or, in the case of this one, you can go in and read the full article. So if I double tap on this one.
Europe agrees raft of safe back button.
So now we're in what's called the reader view. Now, what this app has done is it's gone away, it's got the article off a web page, off the internet, and it's taken out all the ads, and I've chosen to tell it to take out the images as well, so it's not going to bother downloading those, but it can do. And you can change the colours, the text size, etc., for how you want it to be presented to you. If I go towards the top,
Europe agrees raft of safety features to be baked into new vehicles.
So that's the news item heading, if I flick right.
Natasha Lomas.
That's who it was by, Natasha Lomas.
TechCrunch.
And it's from TechCrunch. I'm just flicking here.
All new vehicles sold in the...
And so now, if I do a two-finger swipe down, it'll read the whole item.
All new vehicles sold in the European Union must have a wide range of safety features baked in a standard in the coming years after EU institutions reach provisional agreement on a safety regulation that's aimed at protecting passengers, pedestrians and cyclists. Once formally adopted, most of the new safety features will become mandatory from 2022. The Commission says it expects the measures will help save more than 25,000 lives and avoid at least 140,000 serious injuries by 2038. Among the safety measures that can be built in is a speeding technology that...
To hush it up, if I go to the very bottom of the page...
Share button.
You can share this item, this article, with someone.
Next article button.
I'm just Previous flicking article, left button. Through these items.
Star article.
Star, button. That's a really useful one. This is how you can save them for later.
Mark as red.
Or I button. Could mark this particular item as red. If I'm really interested in it, I would star an item and that gets added to a separate list. If I go back with a two-finger scrub,
Europe agrees raft of safety features to be baked into...
Flick right again.
Microsoft memo bans April Fool's Day pranks because they're the worst. TechCrunch, beware. Instacart rolls out an instant cash-out feature for shoppers. TechCrunch, Instacart is today launching
okay,
a new...
Okay, so I'll stop there. So I've probably read 10 or 15 of them, and obviously there are still some left, so what can you do? Well, I've listened to all of those. If I flick up...
Options.
Options, double tap.
Perform. Options, heading. Mark all above
Mark
as read.
Mark all above
button.
As read. If I do that...
Leary.
So
back
now,
button.
At the very top of the list... It will start with the items that I haven't yet read. So you can so quickly get through items and you can listen to a good chunk of them without even having to go in. And for ones that you want to read the whole of, you can just double tap on it and go in. Very, very accessible. I'll quickly show you the settings.
Settings. Button.
So I did a four-finger double tap towards the bottom there. So it's the very bottom item. If I double tap.
Settings. Settings. Heading.
And if I start flicking right.
Done. Button. Sync mode. Standalone. User interface sounds. Switch button. Unread count badge. Switch button. Font. System. Theme. Night.
So font, you can change that font size. The theme will give you lots of different color choices.
Discover.
Discover is about how it can provide suggestions for you.
Accessibility / voiceover options.
This is the exciting one in under accessibility / voiceover options.
Selected.
Now I've
Settings.
Been working with Kunal, the developer, providing lots of input, and he's really gone to town in this area. I'll just briefly show you a couple in here.
Accessibility options. Heading. Done. Button. Article lists options. This allows you to set what voiceover does and does not speak in a list of articles. Speak time since article date. Switch button. Off. Speak article source / publisher. Switch button. On. Speak article read / unread status. Switch button. Off. Speak article start status. Switch button. Off. Speak article summary. Switch button. On. Article lists order. Heading. This allows you to change the order in which voiceover speak attributes of each article in a list of articles. Heading.
And I'll stop there. So I can have title, author, and the first so many lines of the item spoken, and I can change the order in which I want that. If I want it to start reading the article straight away, before it even reads the title of the article, for example, or where it's from, you can do that too. So just to finish off, how do you subscribe to these different items so they come to you? Well, all you need to do is tap on the search button on the main page of the app and then type in TechCrunch or BBC or football or accessibility, whatever you're interested in, and then it will add that particular search term or publication to your list of subscribed items and they'll just come to you. It searches the internet, it comes back with items that match that criteria, and you're away. Fantastic. More information at LIREAPP.com.
Brilliant, Robin. Absolutely brilliant. And I've already gone out and bought this app. Cost me £6.99 to buy on the Apple App Store, which, for what you're getting, and it is a one-off payment, and yep. Like you say, there's no ads in it once you've got the paid version. That's it. You know, really, really simple. I like it.
And for people who... the front of the show, I said it was free and you said you've just bought it. Yes, so you pay for the app, and I think Kunal deserves every penny. But then afterwards, unlike the News Plus, you know, it's not a subscription service. It's free forevermore. It just goes away, grabs all the articles from a particular publication or on a particular topic and just brings them back and puts them in that super easy view that we saw there. So that's actually how I consume news. I don't go into the Apple News app. I don't follow Twitter for that kind of thing, apart from Radio 4 and obviously Connect
How
Radio.
How dare you? Yes, thank you.
Yeah, quickly, quick save there. You know, that's how I keep up to date.
Yeah, I mean, and that's it. It's about finding what works for you. And I think that something like this does make it easier. Is there a concern around RSS, though? I mean, you know, are more websites moving away from it, or is it still as popular as ever? I mean, it's not something you hear about as much on websites now.
Yeah, I mean, when RSS was first invented, there weren't necessarily websites like the Washington Post that were then putting up a lot of articles behind paywalls subsequently. So it was much more kind of free internet. So potentially people will be putting less and less in the public domain. But those that they don't put behind a paywall, I would see there being no reason why those other articles won't always be available for grabbing by apps like Leary. There are other ones, Feedler and GReader for Android, for example. There are other ones for iOS too. They are, you know, accessible. You would need to double check on websites like appleviz.com, for example, before deciding to go for another one. But we've seen there that Leary in particular is very, very accessible.
Well, look, we're out of time. We were hoping to get to your emails. We didn't get to them this week, but we will get to your emails. Keep them coming, though, at techtalk@rnib.org.uk. If you've got something to say, if you've got a comment on what we've been talking about this week or on any of our shows, get in touch and tell us. We'd love to hear from you. Next week on the programme, I'm going to be taking a look at one of the new apps from the guys behind Voice Dream Reader. They've come out with a new app called Voice Dream Scanner. And initial thoughts, just looking at the description, sounds pretty good, and I think it'll work really well. But that's the test. Does it work really well? We're going to find out on next week's show, and there's lots more besides. But that is it from us. Thank you so much, Robin, as always.
A pleasure. Thanks,
guys. I'll catch you again next time on Tech Talk.
Thanks for listening to Tech Talk. Don't forget to check out and subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for more great interviews and stories about technology for blind people. Just search for RNIB Tech Talk. See you next time.